Pop Spotting 82.
Friday, July 1st, 2011.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan. And hey, baby, happy Comic-Con month.
Woo!
Oh, sorry about that, folks. We are here for Feedback Friday, where we check the Pop Spotting inbox to be schooled by you. And we're going to start with music. A lot of folks really enjoyed your countdown last week.
Oh, that's great, because it was really cool to put together. Laura R. on Facebook writes, I hope you do more podcasts like this. I've always wanted to listen to a podcast that uses music samples to introduce people to new or different music. Here's another one of my favorite California songs, Californication by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Well, that's one of their more well-known songs. It was a title track off of their big album. Why did it not make your list?
It was on my long list. There were just so many songs to consider. Like you said, we sat down with that Wikipedia entry, and I kind of considered every one, but those five were the five to me that are my personal favorites.
Well, Californication isn't a love song to California. It's about the dark side of California. Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with that. A lot of people like the song. It's actually not one of my favorite ones, maybe because it was overplayed. I mean, I'm not particularly excited by even the melody. The lyrics are clever. I gotta say, you know, I'm happy for a Star Trek reference in there, but other than that, it's definitely not high on my list, but it was a California song, and other people had thoughts on that front as well.
Sam B. from Kaysville, Utah writes, me and my dad were listening to your top five California songs, and No Hotel California, California Dreamin', Lights, Even Under the Bridge.
I think those are all great California songs, so what gives? Why weren't they on your list?
They are great California songs, but, and I mean, my top five isn't by no means like a definitive list of the best California songs, only my personal favorites. And I enjoy the Runaways song and the Luna song a little bit more than I enjoy the ones by the Eagles and by the Mamas and the Papas.
And you certainly hear that all the time on any oldie station. Right. And just walking through the mall sometimes. So I can see that, you know, they might be front of mind, but I like the little gems that you brought up.
And Lights, there's actually a very specific reason why Lights is not on the list. Lights is a great song, but when I landed in Hilo, Hawaii to go to school, I was all by myself. I was 21 years old. I got in the cab, and that song was playing on the radio in the cab on the way to school. And Hilo is a city by the bay.
Yes.
Hilo is beautiful. It has wonderful lights. And so, just to me, Lights is about Hilo.
Unlike what you said about Luna and Comic-Con and California and San Diego, I have to say that I am in your head with this one. Lights is our Hilo song. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm sort of trying to muscle in on your memory, but this song was always in high rotation on your iPod, and so we were always listening to it driving around. And in fact, when I hear the strains of that song, I distinctly have a vision of us having been in Hapuna at the beach on the Kona side. We stay later than we should, so we're racing back to the Hilo side, up over through Waimea, down the Hamakua coast. It's already dark. The road is winding. It's raining. And you kind of come past Onomea and you see the city of Hilo right there, just the glistening water and the reflecting lights. And that song reminds me of that drive and, you know, sort of sneaking my hand over and holding your hand. And yeah, so sorry to say that Lights in this particular case for us, it's a Hilo song.
Yeah. So next up, a call from Jeff Gentry.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Jeff Gentry, X-Force 11, calling in for some Friday feedback. Just wanted to share two different groups, artists with you that I'm enjoying as far as music goes. I listen to a wide variety of styles of music, and here are two. The first is Brendan James. He's a singer, songwriter, piano player, but kind of different than some of the things out there. He's got a neat feel, got some pop, you know, sounding songs, some of his songs kind of remind you of Billy Joel. Some of them remind you of an Elton John. But he puts his own spin on things. He's really a neat artist, really personable, and look forward to hearing more from him. The second is Mumford & Sons. Now, they've been getting a lot of play, but some of their best stuff on their new album, Si No More, haven't been played on the radio yet. And it's just a neat mix of kind of a rock, Celtic, bluegrassy type mix. And just a neat album. My favorite song, which would be a hard choice from that album, would, you know, just, it would be too tough to choose. There's a couple that I really like. But just check them out. I know that they're really good. Both CDs are really good. I really enjoyed Mumford & Sons' CD, except for the one song where they used some profanity in it that they really didn't have to. But both CDs are good, and so check them out and let me know what you think. Thanks. Bye.
Mahalo for your call, Jeff. It's always good to hear from you. And there, you know, Laura wanted to hear some new suggestions for music. And I have to say, both of these are new to me. Do you know Brendan James, for example?
I had never heard of Brendan James.
Well, I had to, you know, I had to listen to these samples, and I like it. You know, it's very, very sweet and safe and earnest. He's a nice boy, and he seems to feel deeply what he says. I wouldn't say that he's particularly to my taste, but Mumford & Sons, I mean I'd never heard them before, but I liked what I heard.
They're playing them quite a bit on the radio, and they're really
what's a radio?
The thing that I listened to when I forgot my iPhone.
Okay, so actually they're playing Mumford & Sons like over the terrestrial airwaves right now?
Yes, okay. Yes they are. And they're very unique because not a lot of stuff on the radio sounds like Mumford & Sons. I mean, their violins and acoustic guitars, they're very Celtic sounding, and I really enjoy them a lot.
Well, you know, I was really immediately drawn to their music. It's very, I don't know if it's Irish, but it sounds like it. It's very stompy, very, you know, want to get out there and crack some heads. I mean, it's fantastic. Fantastic stuff. And the weird thing is, he mentions, you know, he's not fond of profanity, but the very first song that I listened to is, I guess, the one that's really popular, and there right. is a, they say, you know, we fracked it up, and I was like, that endeared them to me almost instantly, and I had to, you know, click through to hear more and more of their music. But I think you've created at least another couple of fans.
Oh,
of
yeah.
Mumford
Absolutely.
And Sons. Moving on to television, we got a call from Genevieve.
Hi, this is Genevieve from Houston, Texas, and I've been a longtime fan, especially with the Lost podcast. The transmission, which I missed, and just your last feedback, I heard the "You Are Everybody" and it warmed my heart. So I'm loving this pop spotting, and I just want to give some feedback because I do live vicariously through y'all with the Comic Con and the shows that y'all watch, and you know, just bring me into everything. So I'm really excited for this new podcast because I can listen on days that I work. My work ends up being a little bit later in the day. So, anyways, the new shows this season, this past year that I went through that I didn't really care for, but I was excited for them, were things like The Event, Envy. I was really hoping for big things for both of those shows, and they my interest just, you know, didn't hold. I have my old standbys of Grey's Anatomy, of course, and Criminal Minds, but there's been nothing since Lost that actually grabbed my mind too much. You know, I do like some episodes of Glee, not all of the episodes. I'm not a geek that, you know, has appointment television. So listening to y'all just gets me interested again, especially in some of the shows like Breaking Bad, and I did love the Pushing Daisies. I really wish that had stayed on. Anyways, I just wanted to congratulate y'all on this new show, and I'm pretty excited about it, and I can't wait to hear more from you. This is Genevieve from Houston, Texas. Y'all have a great day.
Thanks for your call, Genevieve. And hey, nothing wrong with being a Gleek. Our daughter is a hardcore Gleek.
Serious Gleek. Today, after church, we listened to the Warblers album like 3 times.
Right, so we definitely can appreciate at least the fun of that show, but she mentions a couple, The Event and V. Now, we certainly, you know, didn't stick around with V. It dropped off our radar very quickly. It didn't sustain us. But I have to admit, The event, for better or worse, we pretty much watched until the end.
Well, not till the bitter end, because we were watching it until it was announced that it was canceled, and then I was really relieved that we didn't have to watch it anymore.
I thought we were enjoying it a little bit. It was a little ridiculous, but I think we were having fun.
It was fun and maybe a kind of a guilty pleasure kind of way.
Well, it was unintentionally fun. The problem with the event was the show took itself so seriously. It was so dark and so intense, and everybody had furrowed brows and were glowering and conspiracies here and there. And so there was that. I mean, there wasn't, you know, humor really in the show. The other part of it is they would get a great sense of momentum. They would have some really great twists, and we'd be watching it, and we'd be on the edge of our seats, and then somebody would do something stupid or say something stupid, or a plot twist would just be completely unbelievable. I mean, you're dealing with the highest level of government, so some of the stuff they were pulling was
I'm going to put your son on the internet and it's going to go viral.
It's going to go viral. You know, your video is going to go viral. I mean, okay. So unfortunately, the event only survived one season, so we don't know how that story is going to end up, but it was an interesting ride at the very least. At the very least, though, Breaking Bad comes back this month, and that's something we have in common.
Yeah.
Now, earlier this week, we talked a little bit about Firefly, actually a little too much about Firefly, perhaps, and we mentioned offhand that Joss Whedon, the creator, had also done another show called Dollhouse, and Don Miller II on Facebook decided to grace us with a Dollhouse review.
He writes, "Having been a fan of Joss Whedon and Firefly, I decided to watch the 26 episodes of Dollhouse. I normally give a show 4 episodes to win me over. After the 4th episode, I was feeling very so-so about the arc of the show, but found Eliza Dushku incredibly attractive, not only in her natural appearance, but in her ability to play so many characters. Since Firefly has been so excellent, I decided to continue with Dollhouse, and I wasn't disappointed. The writing team really ended up telling an awesome story. It was clear that Joss Whedon intended a longer arc and to stretch the overall serialized story, but true to Fox's form, Dollhouse got the axe and had to speed up the serial story. By the end, I wanted more. I wanted to know more history and more of the future, but I felt very satisfied with what Dollhouse accomplished in its short life. Check it out if you haven't."
Well, you know, I have to admit, I sort of have the same rule that Don does have in terms of giving a show about 4 episodes to either hook me or get dropped, and Dollhouse, for better or worse, was dropped pretty quickly from me, and maybe I should have hung in there longer. My issue with it was that everything about Dollhouse hinged on Eliza Dushku's ability to play other characters, and although Don seemed to have been impressed by her performance, I could not get into it at all. Yes, she's pretty.
Yeah,
yes, she's
a
Barbie doll that you can put different costumes. Look, she's a pilot. Look, she's a doctor. Look, she's an assassin. She's a ninja, and that's great, but just putting her in costumes and having her look mean in different ways, I could not buy into what she was doing, and that was why I really couldn't stick with Dollhouse. Now, Dollhouse has a lot of love on Twitter. Zach's Mind is really trying to convince us to give us another shot. He mentions, you know, the season 1 finale, Epitaph 1, and maybe that's where we might start, because apparently that knocked everyone's socks off. I mean, did you see any Dollhouse? Are you interested in Dollhouse?
No, I'm a little interested in it. There's just so much stuff we have to catch up on, though.
I hear you. But maybe that'll be on our backup list, and I definitely want to thank Don for taking the time to give us a detailed review.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, the next topic to come up here in Pop Spotting Feedback and Television was a show that was mentioned, was recommended to us, but we never got around to watching it, and it sounds like we might have been right in making that decision.
Matt Lafferty writes, "I have to share my outright anger about the season finale of The Killing. I know your podcast is spoiler-free, but suffice it to say, if every bit of marketing material asks, who killed Rosie Larson, don't you think we should find out who did it at the end of the season? I am writing this at 3:45 a.m. I literally went to bed after The Killing finale ended and have woke up in the middle of the night enraged.
Wow.
I loved most of the season. It somehow breathed new life into the tried and true police detective drama format. But after that finale, I feel like they have kept the story going because the ratings were good. That plan A was some sort of conclusion, but the show is doing well enough to get another advertising nickel out of me, the fan."
Wow. Well, not happy with how The Killing wrapped up its first season, even though it was renewed for a second season, and Matt was not alone. In fact, Stephanie McGuire on Twitter had tweeted us the next morning and said, "What did you think about that Killing finale?" And I had to admit that we missed it. We didn't see it, and her reply was priceless.
Lucky. At least you didn't waste 13 hours of your life like I did.
That's right. Aaron R. on Twitter wrote, "If I made a recommendation for The Killing," and he did, "I might take it back." And it just went on from there. I was reading a lot of the professional TV critic reviews reviews of the finale, and I have never seen a bunch of folks so mad. And for once, I think finally there's a show that just in sheer agony has finally outdone the dissatisfaction that some people might have had with the Lost finale.
Yeah, I read a lot of that. Like, you know, I thought the Lost finale was bad. This was worse.
Right. I mean, and we didn't think it was bad, just for the record. Right. But there were a lot of people who were very dissatisfied. But this, somehow, the creators of The Killing, people feel they've completely violated a contract. Now, I'm not entirely surprised. I mean, if it's did Twin Peaks solve who killed Laura Palmer in the first season?
Well, I don't remember if it was before or after the first season finale. But the thing about Twin Peaks was there were so many other things going on in Twin Peaks that Laura Palmer's murder was beside the point. It was really the lives of all the secondary characters that really made the show interesting.
And I have to admit, a lot of the reading that I had done about The Killing was that they were still not fully realized characters, so it was this murder mystery that was driving everything forward, and there was just a big twist, and there was not a resolution. And I can see wanting to turn that formula on its head and say, okay, this is going to be like a police procedural, but instead of wrapping it up in 1 hour or 40 minutes, we're going to wrap it up over several episodes. But maybe Rosie Larson could have been wrapped up and just someone else could have been killed in time to start the second season. But it sounds like The Killing lost a lot of our listeners. But if you thought that it was actually daring, if you thought that this was exactly what they should have done, we'd like to hear from you as well. Why should someone tune into Killing for season two?
Finally, a follow-up to our Pop Talk and Trivia segment with Albert Ross. David Swinney writes on the blog, your guest stated that all the writers for The Walking Dead, save for Robert Kirkman, were fired after season one. That may or may not be an accurate description of what happened. Secondly, it's Breaking Bad that returns on July 17th. We won't see season two of The Walking Dead until October.
Very true, and we appreciate that. And actually, Al replied as well. I mean, it's certainly true that in Hollywood, when it comes to the machinations of a studio and the everything that goes into a show, only the people who are involved know what really happened. But it's true that certainly the entire writing staff wasn't fired, but it's certainly been very reconfigured. You know, creator director Frank Darabont is still there, executive producer Robert Kirkman, as he said, Glenn Mazzara is on board, and I think they lost Charles Egli. You know, he had done Dexter and The Shield. He was a very prominent showrunner, and he's leaving Walking Dead, but they've got, you know, three full-time writers as well. So I'm still very positive as far as where Breaking Bad might go. But yes, it is Breaking Bad that returns later this month, not The Walking Dead. That's not until later this fall. But we're very excited about Breaking Bad.
Very excited.
I can now confirm, after we discussed it last week, that there will be a episode-by-episode podcast to go along with Breaking Bad, the official Breaking Bad podcast. And once again, we highly recommend that you listen to
Find it on the iTunes podcast directory and download it. You won't be sorry.
And with that ringing endorsement, we're going to wrap up this week of Pop Spotting and this Feedback Friday with music and TV. Lots of good stuff this week. But we have to stress that it's feedback that keeps us going. It's silence that's our kryptonite. We really love hearing from you. You all, everybody, are our favorite part of this show.
Please don't hesitate to get in touch, to respond, to make any kind of crazy suggestions, and to make it as easy as possible, we give you several different ways to do so.
You can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808. You can drop us an email at feedback@popspotting.net. You can also connect with us at facebook.com/popspotting or twitter.com/popspotting.
Thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and mahalo to you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
I'm Jen.
Aloha.
Arrivederci.